Welcome to the Better Birth Podcast. My name's Erin and I'm a hypnobirthing and antenatal instructor, birth activist and all-round birth geek. In this podcast, I chat to experts in the field of pregnancy and birth, debunking myths around birth, diving into the research around maternity care and exploring what is it that means you're more likely to have a positive birthing experience. If you enjoy this podcast, do feel free to buy me a coffee and fund my caffeine habit. Link to my Buy Me a Coffee page is in the podcast info. Enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Better Birth Podcast. I have the pleasure of talking to Charlotte today, who is from Conscious Birth and Motherhood, and we're going to be talking about eating disorders and pregnancy. So Charlotte, welcome. Lovely of you to agree to come on the podcast. Would you like to just introduce yourself to everybody, a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yes, absolutely. So I am a birth and motherhood coach. I support women both in mindset work, so kind of looking at thought patterns and how we can support any change there to just enhance their connection to themselves, whether making choices for pregnancy or in their motherhood experience. And I do embodiment work as well. So that's a lot more kind of connected to the body. We look at emotional regulation and look at things such as what might make a woman contract or feel triggered in a scenario so that she feels a bit more empowered in her body, as it were. And I think probably important to mention for this conversation is that I also suffered with various eating disorders for kind of much of my teenage years and sort of early to mid 20s. And I've been in recovery probably for about 8 years now.
Okay. So yeah, I think this is a topic that actually doesn't get discussed very much. You know, I don't see, and I binge on birth, you know, content, obviously, because of the work that I do. And I think this is probably the first time that I've seen eating disorders discussed in the context of pregnancy. So I do think it's a really important episode to put out there because it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really get much exposure and discussion. And I imagine being pregnant is an extremely difficult time for somebody who has an eating disorder. I can't say that I've ever, you know, struggled with an eating disorder myself, but I have struggled with, you know, my changing body and, you know, having to think about what you're eating when you're pregnant. So do you want to talk a little bit about some of the challenges that somebody may face if they have an eating disorder when they're pregnant?
Yeah, definitely. So I think it would be helpful to start just by sharing a bit about my perspective on eating disorders and kind of why and how they might manifest. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of multi-layered. So the way that I understand eating disorders is that actually they first emerge as a coping mechanism. So maybe someone doesn't feel safe or in control in their life. Maybe they don't feel worthy or accepted or enough, and as a means of managing that and trying to bring that kind of safety and control into their life, it can really manifest in these behaviors around food, which there's a huge spectrum. Obviously you've got kind of the very restrictive side of things, but actually compulsive overeating or binging is also a means of kind of trying to feel safe, trying to nourish a part of ourselves. And so within the eating disorder, that you then get these manifestations of body dysmorphia and feelings of worthlessness about the body and disgust in the body. And so it's quite interesting because someone can have a hard time in pregnancy, both because of the eating disorder kind of thoughts. I kind of think of the eating disorder as this other being that someone has to live with. And it can be so cruel and very demanding and very controlling, and really can cause someone to act in ways that wouldn't in themselves, were they to feel safe and whole and loved, and by themselves as well as maybe others. And so I think when it comes to pregnancy, there's kind of those both of those aspects. The first one is this very like symptomatic manifestation of the eating disorder, whereby someone may find any loss of control over, or at least perceived control over, their body very challenging. I think for people with eating disorders also, their feelings, their emotions can get very intertwined with this sense of bigness in their body. And that's where some of that body dysmorphia comes from. Actually, if you speak to someone, obviously it's not universal. People have all sorts of different symptoms that they experience. If you speak to, I think, several people who have experienced any sort of restrictive tendencies or body dysmorphia, they will say that they experience feeling fat. Feeling fat is not really a feeling, it's not really an emotion, but often you'll see that there's a connection between that experience and maybe something happening in their lives, whether it's something exciting or sad or infuriating. You know, it can be the whole spectrum of emotions that can lead to this kind of response in the body. And so when you're thinking about that, obviously when someone becomes pregnant, there's all sorts of things that can happen. They can start to feel nauseous, which, you know, actually for me, when I got into recovery, it was bulimia that I was really struggling with. So actually, even though I was 6 years into recovery, that feeling of nausea and feeling quite close to being sick, which I used to, you know, do to myself often, it was kind of triggering. It brought back memory of what it, you know, of my experience of bulimia. Not that I experienced lots of nausea in bulimia, but, you know, it's that same sort of sensation in the throat, in the upper chest. Memory is quite like a challenging time. But of course, if someone is still struggling, it, you know, it can almost become this justification, this excuse to keep going with some of those behaviors, because it's almost like the body's also telling you it needs to do that if it does need to be sick or if it does feel nauseous. So I think that's something that can be really challenging. And then of course things like your breasts growing, because it's not just your stomach, of course, like other parts of your body change. And actually, again, someone with maybe more restrictive tendencies might already find it really hard to have breasts. Like often there is this sort of conflict with ability. And I think that all kind of feeds into it. So all of the bodily changes can really be such a challenge, and if anything could drive more of the behaviors that someone's already experiencing and living with. But I think the other piece that's really important to mention is that if you consider an eating disorder to be a coping strategy, and you think that when you become pregnant you're on this precipice of you being this new responsibility coming into your life. I certainly, when I got pregnant, it wasn't something that was very intentional that we'd planned for. So I started sort of obsessing about where we were going to live, if we were going to have enough to be able to support this baby. And when there are those more challenging times, obviously that, you know, that in itself can kind of just trigger the behaviors, even if it's not anything even to do with the changes in the body. It's just the fact that there's this huge life change going on. You know, I often think about the fact that, so you just come across so many people who will decide just to do some like huge house renovation or, you know, suddenly move house or something. And I think everyone maybe has this sort of struggle where they have this perception of how they want maybe what they have. And I think when you kind of manage it and regulate it, then it can be really challenging for someone that does struggle with any obsessive or compulsive behaviors around their body or foods. But I mean, I kind of see eating disorders in the same spectrum of, you know, self-harm, addiction. So it, you know, it kind of goes for any of those things. But I think where we're talking about women and bodily changes, obviously eating disorders, I think, are something that can really be almost worsened if someone is feeling a bit stable and then comes.
Yeah, and I think it's not just how you're feeling in yourself either. I think the whole experience of being pregnant and dealing with healthcare professionals who may not be you know, trained on dealing with certain situations or just not aware or particularly empathetic. And then things like being weighed at your booking appointment and being weighed throughout pregnancy and having your BMI charted and having fundal height measurements and all of this focus on your size. And then discussions around diet and what you're eating. And, you know, I think there's an opportunity to kind of almost hyper focus on things that are going to be extremely triggering for somebody with an eating disorder, right?
Totally. I'm so glad you mentioned all of that because you're spot on. And, you know, I think it's really important to say that, you know, you can obviously choose not to be weighed, or you can choose not to be told your weight or see your weight. And that's available to anyone. You don't have to have an eating disorder to make those choices. And it's the same whether you're pregnant or you're just going to the doctor and they ask to, you know, take your weight down or whatever it is. Like, that's always your choice. And yeah, I had a client actually who had been, basically she was in a midwife appointment, and towards the end the midwife said to her something along the lines of, I think it's time to lay off the pasta, which, I mean, it's just so insensitive and rude, I think, anyway. But also, I think, just to acknowledge, even women, this is not a woman who has struggled with eating disorders, but has, as you said, maybe just found changes in her body hard. As I'm sure most women experience, that there's a lot of pressure on women, you know, throughout our lives to look or be a certain way. And so I think it's kind of universal, but obviously heightened in someone that is actually ill with an eating disorder. And yeah, all of those things, I mean, they're just so harmful. And I think even more struggling with something like a binge eating disorder or bulimia, where they might even look a normal weight or a bit overweight, and, you know, you can't necessarily see that they're struggling with that. I think that it's something that should be treated with sensitivity, no matter who the woman is, because, you know, even if the number of the prevalence of eating disorders is relatively low, although the threshold for meeting that prevalence is quite high. Mm. But about 75% of those people are going to be women. Mm. So, you know, it affects women obviously disproportionately across the population. But yeah, all of those things, I think it's really important to remember it's a choice, but it can be really hard to ask for them. And I would always encourage people, I found it really helpful in my sort of booking appointment to just share all of my history. And I was actually met with quite a lot of support. I was told that it was something that was taken quite seriously. And I, you know, it wasn't something I was struggling with at the time, but obviously I was a bit apprehensive about how pregnancy was going to affect me or what it was going to bring up for me. And I was, you know, given all of the options of support that could be available were they needed. As it turned out, I didn't, you know, I felt pretty well in myself and didn't need to access any of that support, but I was given kind of one additional appointment, sort of obstetric appointment at about 17 weeks, I think, to like check in. And yeah, my experience wasn't great. I was sort of called the day before rather than like the day it was scheduled for, which I have to say, you know, for someone with an eating disorder where like that safety and control is being sought, actually things like the timing of stuff is like quite important. And you know, to feel like you're actually being really heard and seen and acknowledged. And yeah, I was called, and it felt very routine. And I think I came off the call just thinking, but eating disorders are very manipulative and very dishonest, actually. There's like a really strong pull to keep them secret. People often have like a lot of shame around experiencing the eating disorder. But also, if you think that this is something that feels like a place of safety, you know, it almost feels like a best friend. And the idea that if it's exposed, it could be taken away, that can feel really, really difficult for someone. And so, actually, you know, I think just an odd phone call from someone you don't know, I came off it definitely thinking it's unlikely if I was struggling that I would have said something in that moment. And I think that's definitely something, you know, I really acknowledge there's so much awareness that's required of healthcare professionals, and you know, so many different things that's expected of them already. But certainly, if we're focusing on this topic, I think just understanding that actually a lot of trust would be required for someone to be able to say, actually, some stuff's come up for me and I'm finding it really hard, because that it's very vulnerable to ask for help in that way. And it's very counter to what the eating disorder is almost telling you to do. So it's a really big step for someone to ask for help. Although, of course, I would always suggest that people do if they're ready and willing to accept some help, because life is a whole lot better without an eating disorder.
So what kind of help did you get offered, and what kind of help can somebody who does have an eating disorder expect to be offered?
So the things that were mentioned, I mean, they're a specialist psychiatric team, so I think that's probably where it's more of a severe case. That was something that was offered. And then also, there was a counselling option as well. If I felt like I was struggling, that was something the midwife said that I could sort of bring back to them and discuss with them, and they could always refer me to that. And then, of course, I was given this additional appointment, just kind of a standard, which, to be honest, I was quite impressed with, like how seriously they took it, actually. You know, it was significant to me that I felt like someone else was just like looking out for me in that way. And so I'm sure it varies across different trusts and midwifery teams and things, but I think generally, obviously, if there is availability, I would have thought there would be some counselling available to antenatally to women who are struggling with mental health in general, but obviously we're talking about eating disorders here. And then there are amazing charities like BEAT who have, you know, helplines that are open regularly. And of course, they don't necessarily have specific expertise in pregnancy, but they support women with eating disorders all the time. So there are always options if you want to go outside of the kind of NHS system as well to seek help.
Yeah, I guess that may be a preference for some people, because they may not, I'm not saying they shouldn't seek support from their midwives in the hospital, but I suppose some people may feel more comfortable seeking support from elsewhere. So it's good that they've got options for both, and it's good that they took it seriously as well. I think maybe if there's any midwives or doctors or, you know, healthcare professionals listening to the episode, I think one thing I would want them to take away from this discussion is to have an awareness. And this is, you know, wider than just eating disorders. It's because it could, you know, the person you are speaking to could be struggling with all sorts of different things, you know, history of sexual abuse or, you know, all sorts of different things that they're struggling with. And they're not obliged to or may not want to tell their midwife their history and the things they're struggling with. So there has to be some kind of awareness that, you know, the language that you're using and the things that are daily routine, you know, standard things that a midwife may do, like just hop on the scales or, you know, discussing, you know, weight and things need to be done with a sensitivity and with an awareness that it could be a really tricky topic for somebody. And I think sometimes, well, not sometimes, a lot of the time that doesn't happen because, I mean, we know, right? They're busy. They have, you know, however many minutes per person to do their booking appointment or do their antenatal appointment. And I think, you know, sometimes that awareness and empathy goes out the window. So I think from a birth worker, midwife, consultant, doctor, healthcare professional perspective, I think just bringing back that awareness, I think is really, really, really important. Not just for the eating disorders, but just in general, I think is really, really key, crucial.
That's it. I mean, everyone's human, right? Everyone's going to have their own struggles to a more or lesser extent. And even on that, as you said, things that are as routine as taking a fundal height measurement, you know, when I was really struggling, the idea of someone touching my stomach would make me shudder, honestly. It would be something I was so uncomfortable with. And equally, I probably wouldn't have felt comfortable to assert that boundary and say I'm not comfortable with that, because when you're struggling with an eating disorder, it's likely that your self-esteem and your self-worth are incredibly low. So then actually to have to go into this space where you're really vulnerable and assert your needs and kind of take that extra step to say, actually, that's something I'm really not comfortable with, is just a mammoth ask of someone that's, you know, in that really vulnerable time in their lives. So I couldn't agree more. You know, it really comes back to approaching the individual as an individual. And actually also, if there was continuity of care, then you could build this relationship with people and actually get to know them and maybe build some of this trust and have these discussions. And I think it would be so powerful for a woman to be introduced to their midwife and say, this is your midwife. She's going to be caring for you throughout your pregnancy, you know, have a cup of tea, build a relationship, you know, those things have positive outcomes for a reason. And it's not, you know, it's not a fluke that actually building connection with another human being has a more positive outcome for a woman.
Yeah, you're right. And in an ideal world, wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody had a named midwife who did follow them throughout pregnancy? And I mean, that's like the holy grail, isn't it? That's really what we all want to aim for. It's just not a reality in the current maternity NHS system, is it? Which is unfortunate. The other thing that I did want to ask is, because you've mentioned bulimia, and what other types of eating disorders are there that, you know, either somebody who has one may not even realize that they're struggling with an eating disorder? And I know we like to label things, right? The healthcare system likes to label things like your low BMI or high BMI, for example, and then putting risk labels on things. But I think it might be helpful just to talk a little bit about the kind of spectrum of different eating disorders from both birth worker and pregnant person perspective. So do you want to talk a little, just touch a little bit on that as well?
Yeah, definitely. And I would say I've worked with a lot of women throughout their own recoveries over the course of my recovery. And most women tend to have maybe a primary set of behaviors, but actually tend to kind of cross the whole spectrum. So yes, if I miss anything, please forgive me, anyone listening. There's restrictive eating behaviors or you know, that goes into anorexia, which is typically with someone who would be clinically diagnosed with anorexia, they would be severely underweight, but people can be very restrictive eaters and not necessarily be underweight, but be malnourished and weak and be struggling with all the other things that come, you know, behind that symptom. So people with anorexia tend to be very controlling in their behaviors. They tend to need to have things a certain way. They tend to need to know lots of information about what's going on so that they feel in control of the situation. And I would say, actually, with all eating disorders, it's very interesting. The manifestation of the eating disorder can be reflected in other areas of the life. So people can be sexually anorexic, for example, where they can find intimacy very difficult. And actually, when someone is really restricting their food, it's not really any wonder, because you're so weak, you don't really have the capacity to engage and socialize. And beyond that, the thoughts that are required to keep you in that state of restriction are so obsessive and repetitive. Really, all of your energy just goes into obsessing about what you can and can't eat and how you can control things. Often people with anorexia, but this can be standalone as well, will struggle with compulsive over-exercise, so exercise addiction, but also people can use exercise in a very bulimic way. So they might binge and then go and do a lot of exercise, and that's sort of another form of purging, or you know, releasing calories or whatever it is. Bulimia tends to be a binging and purging pattern, but as I just said, it can be with exercise as well. And again, it's really interesting, in relationships or around money, people can have those very same tendencies where maybe there's a real intensity and then there's a real like avoidance of something. And then binge eating disorder or compulsive overeating will be where someone's compulsively eating. They feel very powerless over it. It's not a choice that they're making themselves. And they won't necessarily use any behaviors to counter the food that they're consuming. Often, I mean, all of them do, but I think often binge eating disorder comes from a lot, comes with a lot of guilt and shame and frustration. And actually, it's interesting. I mean, at the core, because all of the eating disorder manifestations are really masking emotions and the ability to cope with emotions, people with eating disorders can be quite erratic because they're not really able to regulate things like their anger. And actually, you know, if someone with an eating disorder feels angry, they might either binge or binge and purge or go for a really long run, and they're not actually kind of experiencing and releasing that emotion and allowing themselves to feel it. And so, yeah, I guess in terms of, you know, what that means for anyone working with a pregnant person who is struggling with an eating disorder, there can be a lot of chopping and changing minds, maybe, you know, some erratic behavior, or they could just disappear for a while and you don't really know where they've gone, or they might suddenly start canceling a lot of appointments, you know. There's so many other things that come with an eating disorder because of how someone feels about themselves. So, for example, social anxiety, like they might actually find it very hard to be in groups of people, either because they're experiencing shame around their body and what they look like, or because actually they don't believe that they're a worthy and valuable human being who deserves to be in connection and in communities and things like that. So I think, you know, those are sort of the most traditionally spoken about manifestations of the eating disorder. I'm just thinking if there's anything else. I mean, obviously people can be struggling without having this extreme version. You know, people might just find that they sometimes find themselves eating and they don't really know why. And you know, I'd certainly say if they're able to, it can be just really interesting to get curious about what's happening in that moment, because usually, you know, what we call like emotional eating, I think it's actually a quite a normal human behavior, and it's where we're just not able to kind of quite regulate ourselves properly. But I think if you think about birth and how important it is to feel relaxed, and in our parasympathetic nervous system is activated and being in that restful state, I would say someone with an eating disorder spends a lot of their life with their sympathetic nervous system activated. They're actually often in quite high stress. So someone like that would find it very hard to relax or not experience threat, because when you've not dealt with that threat that you experienced, whether it was in childhood or later in life, then you're just on that, in that state of heightened alertness. It just becomes your norm, basically. And so I think that can also be a real challenge for people, especially when it comes to giving birth, either not feeling in control of how the birth is going to be, or just experiencing this greater level of threat and not being able to relax in their body, which we know can have such an impact on the physiological process of birth as well.
Yeah, I think you said the key word there is control or loss of control. And I think a lot of people who are pregnant, whether they experience an eating disorder or they're just anxious about giving birth, I think it's that loss of control that is really triggering for a lot of people. And again, it's something to be mindful of as a birth worker and as a midwife. I think that you are in an ideal world, that birthing person, that pregnant person is given as much control as possible, as feasible, in decision making, in the process of giving birth, in planning, so that they don't feel out of control and they don't feel triggered. And that's going to lead to you know, being stressed and, you know, triggering that parasympathetic nervous system and having a traumatic experience when they're giving birth. And I can see parallels with the, you know, with the eating disorders and other challenges that people face when they're pregnant. I think there's definite, you know, parallels there.
Totally. And actually, you know, although I said anger is, you know, often underneath the eating disorder, there is a huge amount of fear. And we know that fear is something that can, you know, can really make us feel out of control. And ultimately, birth is not necessarily something that we can control, but there are some elements that we can control. And I think for people, birth workers, midwives, whoever it is working with pregnant women, to understand what that woman needs from her pregnancy and the way up, from her birth rather, in the way of support, and what elements maybe can feel a bit more in her control, is really important. I did want to mention as well, I mean, you asked about support, and I mentioned some of the more traditional things that might be available to women. My own recovery has been various things, like, you know, I've had some therapy, I was in a treatment center for a while, but the main thing has actually been a 12-step program. So 12-step, traditionally people know about Alcoholics Anonymous, but there's actually loads of anonymous programs for all sorts of different obsessive compulsive behaviors that people might experience. And the largest global one for food is called Overeaters Anonymous, which is a bit of an off-putting name for people who struggle with food, but it's something that's really changed my life. It's really focused on peer support, on connection. There is a program of work that you kind of work through as well, but ultimately you're very supported and it's free. And I think, you know, it can be really hard to access support when it feels like there's maybe a monetary barrier and things like that. And so I did also want to, I don't know why I didn't mention it earlier, I guess I was thinking about what's specifically available for pregnant women, but I'm connected with loads of mums and loads of women that get pregnant in 12-step programs, and it's all anonymous. Like, I know the first names of literally hundreds of women. I don't know what they do, where they work, but know loads about their lives. And it's a really wonderful community to be part of. So it feels important to mention that as well. And yeah. I'd be very happy if anyone wanted to reach out to ask about it, to share more as well.
Thank you. What I'll do is in the show notes, I'll make sure I put links to all of the different organizations and charities that you've mentioned so that people can find them. And where can people find you? Because maybe people may want to contact you and have a chat to you as well.
Yeah, sure. So the best place is on Instagram. So yeah, I am conscious_birth_and_motherhood. Conscious Birth and Motherhood. I'm sure you'll find me if you search for me, or Charlotte Mindell, I should come up as well. So that's really the best place to find me. If you DM me, I'll definitely see it. So just in case anyone doesn't have Instagram, my website is consciousbirth.online. So they can always send me an email there as well.
Lovely. Thank you so much for your time today. I think it's been a really important topic to cover. And I'll make sure I tag all of those important resources that you mentioned. And if anybody does want to chat to you, I'll make sure that they get to your Instagram and can contact you.
Thanks, Erin. Yeah, that would be great. It's been a pleasure talking to you as well.
Thank you.
The Better Birth podcast and all of its content is for educational and informational purposes only. You should consult your midwife or your doctor for anything in relation to your own pregnancy and birth. The opinions and the views of the guests on the Better Birth podcast are their own opinions and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Better Birth or Erin Fung.